Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
Well, Super Bowl 45 is now history, but the big question for me is, does God actually care about the Super Bowl? Is he involved, or could it be he works out his purposes through it? You'll find out right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
You know, there are a lot of people that say, thank God it's Friday. I was just thinking, thank God it's Monday. Back with you here on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. Was God rooting for or orchestrating the victory for the Green Bay Packers? Was God trying to teach something to the Pittsburgh Steelers? Did the devil get involved? Was God with one player making one play and stopping another player from making another play? Does God even care about the Super Bowl? Is it just an idolatrous, worldly, money-making fest? We'll talk about it. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884, or on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. By the way, did you get my email today listing several messages for free download? Some powerful messages I preached at Fire, our congregation, a couple of weeks back, Spiritual Awakening, Power of God, and then a recent radio broadcast, linked them all. Did you get the email? Say no. Go to AskDrBrown.org, sign up for our emails, and this way we'll keep you posted on things. Okay, I am also going to take some time, not just to talk about the Super Bowl, in a practical way. We're going to talk through some practical spiritual things and get your feedback and probably read some of the comments that are flooding in on Facebook already. But I want to talk to you more about Egypt, as the situation is now 2 weeks in with the rioting, with the upheaval, with perhaps a little bit more clarity, and then some testimony from people on the streets that you don't hear much about, an Egyptian Christian and his perspective from the streets of Egypt. I want to get into that, but first let me lay out some of my Super Bowl-related questions, all right? We know that yesterday, big event, Super Bowl 45, and how many hundreds of millions of people watch this event worldwide? I just noticed a post on Facebook by someone in England, a young lady, saying, what is the Super Bowl? Which is wonderful. And there are plenty of people around the world that could care less about it, and plenty of people that never heard of it and don't know that it happened. Their life was completely unaffected. And in the context of world interest, it doesn't have the passion of the nation, say, the way World Cup soccer would. But Super Bowl is a massive event in America. In other countries around the world, people tune in and watch the big football game of the year. Is it just idolatry? Or are we so consumed with this? I mean, the game doesn't start until East Coast time, like 6:30 in the evening, so it doesn't get in the way of Sunday morning church services. But do you know there are churches who have Sunday night services that cancel them because no one's going to show up on a Sunday night, or very few on a Sunday night, because it's Super Bowl Sunday? I remember a few years ago when the New York Giants played the New England Patriots and defeated them and ended their perfect season in the Super Bowl. And there was a catch considered the greatest catch in the history of the Super Bowl and considered by some a miraculous catch. And the man that caught it testified as a Christian to what happened and how it happened, how God wanted to use it and all that. You take it or leave it. I'm just sharing the reports with you. Well, check this out. Check this out. I was scheduled to teach at the King Seminary in California that weekend, and the class was going to be Sunday afternoon, Monday, Tuesday. And then one of the professors contacted me and said, Mike, listen, there's a problem. That's Super Bowl Sunday. And I'm concerned if we start the class on a Sunday afternoon, we may lose some students. And I said, well, let's smash that idolatry right here and now. And we'll schedule it for then, because that's when it fits in the schedule best with the students and with me, or with the school and with me. And if people are more concerned about the Super Bowl than a three-day intensive seminary class, then I don't want them in my class. I said it half in jest, but also to say, hey, we're not going to have the Super Bowl get in the way of our schedule. And I didn't really care. Whoever plays, doesn't matter. Well, little did I know that I'm a New Yorker. Come on, the New York Giants were going to be playing and fighting against the Patriots in their perfect season. And it ended up that just when we took our dinner break from the class in the seminary, it just happened to be towards the end of the game when we got to see that amazing catch and towards the end of the Giants' victory. Then I said, hey, back to class. And we just saw the end that the Giants won. You know, someone on the cell phone got that info. Okay, the fact is, you could make the case for this just being idolatrous. And come on, in most of the games, you got the cheerleaders and the sensuality and some fleshly halftime show. And what do the advertisers pay millions of dollars for 30 seconds? And it's just commercialism. And then the sport itself is violent. Or you could say, God is not going to bypass something with tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people watching. I mean, if he cares for the sparrow and he's numbered the hairs on our head, he's not going to bypass the Super Bowl in terms of his involvement. And do you know the platform that players have? Let's say you're a Christian, like professing Christian like Drew Brees with the New Orleans Saints, who won last year. You know the platform that they have to go into schools and to talk to young people and to talk about righteousness? And there are other players that they use their reputation. They're committed Christians. They use their reputation to further the gospel. And perhaps God is at work through the victory, through the loss, to do different things. But on the other hand, there's another perspective. It gets a little confusing because you have Christians on both teams. And one guy makes a great play, and he praises the Lord for that, you know, gives the Lord the glory, points up to the sky. And then the next guy on the other team makes a great play against the other guy's team, and he points to the sky and praises the Lord. Is God just blessing both, or does he care? You know, what if some Muslim was playing on the team, and his team won, and he got up and said, I just have to praise Allah, you know, for this great victory? You think, Allah doesn't care about a football game? Allah's not involved in a football game. You got to be kidding me. Or Allah's more powerful than Jesus. Is that how it works? So it can get kind of silly. But I'd like to hear your take. Does God care? Does it matter? Is it more a matter of idolatry? Or is it something, hey, it's a sport, and these men are disciplined, and they're athletes, and whatever they do for the glory of God. There's nothing sinful about what they're doing. And God will use this to communicate his gospel through the players because they have influence, they have impact, they touch many lives, they are role models. What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, let's spend some time back on Egypt, and then we'll come back to the Super Bowl. All right, fair enough? There is an excellent article by David Horowitz, Dangerously Underestimating the Muslim Brotherhood, in Sunday's Jerusalem Post, so yesterday, February 6th. He says the precedents are fresh and obvious, yet the U.S. government seems intent on ignoring them. In Iran, in 1979, leftists and other secular forces central to the rising pressure that ousted the Shah were duped and then outflanked by Islamist supporters of Ayatollah Khomeini, who took power and have cemented it for 32 years since. The Islamists achieved this despite having constituted only the most marginal of forces just a couple of years earlier. In other words, when we are looking at Islam in Iran today, we think of that as just this heavily Islamic country dominated by Islamic radicals with a radical mentality through the country. David Horowitz is saying, you know, prior to the rise of Islam in the late 70s, the radical Muslims constituted only the most marginal of forces just a couple years earlier. In the Palestinian territories in 2006, the U.S. insisted on pressing ahead with elections that, in part because of Fatah's corruption and disorganization, saw the underestimated Islamic Hamas terrorist group gain a parliamentary majority, which it then exploited to violently take over the Gaza Strip a year later. So here in 2006, okay, Fatah, Islamic but not as radical as Hamas, looks like, you know, time, let's really push and let's move ahead with the elections and so on, and U.S. pushing to do that in 2006. And please notice these are different presidents, President Bush then, President Obama now. So these are patterns that America's been involved in for some years now. So you push for elections there and go ahead with them in the midst of some instability. And what happens? Hamas, radical Islam, rises to the surface. In Lebanon, over the past few weeks, the Iranian-inspired controlled and financed Hezbollah outmaneuvered the hapless Prime Minister Saad Hariri to complete what amounts to a gradual, highly sophisticated takeover of the country. So Lebanon, which would have much more moderate forces and ancient Christianity, maybe not everywhere or in many cases a born-again Christianity, but a traditional Christianity side by side with Islam there, and then Hezbollah, the radical Islamic faction, now Hezbollah basically taking over there. In Turkey in recent years, the article continues, confidence that such secular bulwarks as the army and the judiciary would prevent growing Islamic domination of the national agenda has proved increasingly misplaced, again via the subtle and protracted marginalization of these former establishment pillars. Turkey, champion of Hamas, nemesis of Israel, is now drifting inexorably out of the Western orbit. In other words, radical Muslims, we're not giving them enough credit, recognizing the force, the influence they have. Now, Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, ready, poised to come into a dramatic leadership role. Is this what we want? Talk about this some more, give you some reports from the ground, some interesting Jewish ministry updates, and we'll talk again about the Super Bowl. Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much for being with us today, Michael Brown. Glad to be with you on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire for our recent programs. Click there also to find out about our online classes. You can study Jewish roots with me, intensive 12-hour class online. You can study principles of revival with me, intensive 12-hour class also online. Those are now available for the first time ever, just this year. So please go there, check out the information as to how you can sign up and be part of that. Okay, before we get back to our discussion about does God care about the Super Bowl, I want to talk about some other issues, other things happening around the world. And I was reading some excerpts from a Jerusalem Post article by David Horowitz about the dangers of underestimating the Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood being one of the key players right now in the uprising in Egypt. And what prompted a lot of the uprising was what seemed to be corrupt election results, stacked election results, some directly affecting the Muslim Brotherhood, in fact, quite radically. And somehow America seems to be dealing with them as if they are a moderate influence. Maybe we're not sure how to look at them, but hoping that they'll be moderate. Check this out. David Horowitz in this article says this: a much-cited, though not always accurately, Pew Research Center of Muslim Attitudes, published only 2 months ago, indicates how frighteningly fertile the ground is for the Islamists in Egypt. 82% of Egyptian Muslims favor stoning people who commit adultery. 77% favor whipping, cutting off of hands for theft and robbery. And 84% favor the death penalty for people who leave the Muslim religion. By way of comparison... The comparable percentages in Turkey, even as it submits to growing Islamist influence, were just 16%, 13%, and 5% respectively. So Turkey, which was a fairly secular Muslim nation, is becoming more and more Islamic, is a fraction of the radicality that's already in Egypt. The same survey found that among Egyptian Muslims who see a struggle between those who want to modernize their country and Islamic fundamentalists, a striking 59% side with the fundamentalists and only 27% with the modernizers. Pew also found that 54% of Egyptian Muslims believe suicide bombings can be justified often, 8%, sometimes 12%, or rarely 34%, as against 46% who said they could never be justified. So all that to say, there is a lot more Islamic radicalism there than many people are recognizing and understanding. I found it fascinating. There was a report sent out by an intercessor in Israel, and he said, look, here's a report you don't hear. This is from an Egyptian believer, man of prayer, in Egypt. And he said this: as we follow the unfolding of events, including the announced change in government and President Mubarak's speech, We wondered why the international news media is focusing only on the thousands in Tahrir Square who are escalating their demands and refusing dialogue. The news media is reporting this as the people of Egypt wanting Mubarak to leave immediately. Did they ask the people of Egypt? For one, they did not ask me. Where are those like myself that want change and reform but accept the changes that Mubarak is proposing and want a peaceful transition through elections in September? We decided to take to the streets to voice our opinion. On Tuesday, February 1st, we went to Mustafa Mahmoud Square in Mohandinsin. There were about 1,000 people there around 3:30 p.m. Yes, we broke the curfew. The crowd grew to about 2,500 by 5 p.m. People were calling their friends over the phone, telling them to come. We left at about 6:30 p.m., returned yesterday, Wednesday, starting at 11 a.m. The small group had swelled to tens of thousands of people standing together with banners saying things like, now ask yourself, friends, if you've heard any of this in the media, if this is being widely reported, and if it's not, why? And I don't have answers to some of these questions. I'm putting this out so we get a bigger perspective. Here's some of the signs, the banners they had out. Yes to stability, yes to Mubarak. Give change a chance. We are sorry, Mr. President. We accept dialogue. We trust you. No to El Baradei. No to the Muslim Brotherhood. Many, like this one. We are the Egyptians. Where is Al Jazeera? Let them come and see. No to corruption. No to vandalism. We got what we asked the president for, so why are people still in Tahrir? Who are they? What do they want? What I'm hearing from different reports on the ground is that what may have started in terms of an uprising coming from one angle has now been fueled further by radicals, many of them not from Egypt itself. All that to say, we really need to be in prayer for God's kingdom purposes to be accomplished. We really need to say, God, work out your will in the Middle East, because this is very volatile. This could cause a lot of suffering for a lot of people. This could bring a lot more bondage. This could bring a lot more challenges to Christians living within the country. That being said, you take a country like Iran, radical Muslim country, which rules with an iron fist in so many ways, and yet the gospel is spreading. Yet there are many, many reports of thousands and thousands and thousands of Muslims getting saved in Iran under radical Islam. So we often see that what looks like it's for the worst, God uses for better purposes for the advancing of his kingdom, and yet it's very complex. And of course, the Muslim Brotherhood would have no desire to keep the peace with Israel, as Mubarak did. Anwar Sadat before him, Mubarak, was Mubarak a dictator? Is he? Is there corruption? There's no question. There's no question. Is there going to be democracy in Egypt? I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. One more quick report. David Dolan, strong Christian reporter in Israel for many, many years, he says Israeli officials are also looking with increased trepidation to the north of their country, where sworn enemies Iran and Syria have just succeeded in toppling the pro-Western Hariri government via their Hezbollah ally. This starting development has received very little media attention due to the crisis in Egypt. It is not likely that this lack of attention is just as the evil regime ruling Iran wants it. Questions. Will Egypt eventually break its peace treaty with Israel? David Dolan says, I suspect that in the end, the American-funded and trained army will not allow this to take place. I noted in my latest book, Dolan says, Israel in Crisis, that Egypt is not listed in Psalm 83 as being among a host of regional Arab powers that will attempt to destroy Israel in the prophesied end days, while Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria are mentioned, along with the Palestinians. While some are now saying that Egypt will participate in the Gog and Magog war prophesied in Ezekiel 38 and 39, I disagree. Okay, how much can we take a psalm like Psalm 83 and say this ultimately applies to what's happening in Israel today, in the Middle East today? And then we have Isaiah 19 that talks about Egypt and Assyria, which is modern-day Iraq, being united together with Israel in worship of the one true God. How does this pan out? Good questions. If anyone tells you they have all the answers, please send them to me, because I'm reading the same Bible. They are serving the same God. They are, and I just don't know that we have all the answers to these questions. But I give you a few more perspectives, and I say that we need to be praying for the kingdom purposes to come to pass. Many times when I pray for Israel in the Middle East, I know I'm praying for the salvation of Jews, Muslims. I'm praying for the salvation of God to break in the region. and I'm praying for the kingdom of God to be advanced, but many times I do not know how to pray specifically, and therefore I throw myself on God and say, God, your name be hallowed in Israel, in the Middle East. Your kingdom come, your will be done. In Egypt, it's crucial. It's a crucial moment. We need to be praying. That we can do. When we come back, I'm going to read you some interesting reports about criminality in the NFL, faith in the NFL, and back to the Super Bowl. All right, we are getting back to the NFL, to the Super Bowl, not to comment on the game itself, not to analyze what happened and why the Packers won and why the Steelers lost, but to look at it from a spiritual perspective and to ask, does God care who wins and who loses? Does God actually orchestrate things in games so that one team wins and the other team loses? 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Online, Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown. Ask Dr. Brown is our ministry page on Facebook, where we not only post questions for the day relative to the radio program, we also post all kinds of information, our latest articles, our latest messages, lots of other stuff. Okay, I'm going to tell you a quick story, all right? Quick story. When I was teaching on Long Island, Christ for the Nations had a branch on Long Island, 83 to 91, and I taught there a good number of those years. And it was during that time that the New York Mets were playing the Boston Red Sox in the World Series. Now, for some, this is a good memory I'm stirring up. Others get a little upset when you hear this if you're from New England. All right. So we didn't have a TV in those days, but I was listening to the game on the radio. And it's, what, the sixth game. The Red Sox are about to win. Mets down two outs, two strikes, nobody on, if I recall. And a ground ball, and it goes through the legs of the first baseman. And it's like, what? He missed the ground ball. So now the Mets have a guy on first. And another hit. They win. It's one of the most amazing things that happened in baseball history. The Mets won. Okay. I come into church service the next day, and one of the guys tells me, Brooklyn guy, I was interceding for the Mets, he said. And he said, right then when there were two outs and two strikes, that's when I had the assurance that they were going to win. And wouldn't you know it, but the guys, as I was told the story, that got the hits one after another, the guys that got the hits at the end of the game were all professing born-again Christians. They put out a video testifying to what the Lord did in this whole bit. Okay. Well, I come into the office after that weekend, and the business manager, I just saw his dad down in Texas this past week, the business manager, who's from Boston, New England area, he's terribly upset. And of course, the Mets end up winning the World Series and so on. So he's upset about what happened, and especially the talk that God was with the Mets. And I said, hey, look, man, I was messing around with him. He said, what, the Mets have more Christians than the Red Sox? Is that how it works? Well, I mean, is God like showing something, teaching a lesson, honoring the faith? Hey, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God, right? So if you got believers on one team for the Lord, does that mean that the Lord's with that team? Then I remember some guys from our church play the softball team of guys I worked with one summer. They were like 18, 19 years old at that point. Some guys in the 20s. And anyway, the team of very unsaved guys beat our church team, you know, which was not a very good team because we didn't really have a regular team. This guy's got together to play. And the guys were getting on me at work and, you know, Satan's team beat God's team. You know, Satan was more powerful. The devil's more powerful. Is this just nonsense, craziness to even think like God was with one team? Oh, no, they didn't know. It was an atheist quarterback. One. Oh, well, then how did he beat the godly quarterback? Well, maybe God wanted to teach the person through losing, or maybe God doesn't care about it. You got starving multitudes around the world. You got people in hospitals dying of cancer. You got people lost, going to hell every second. Does this matter? Who cares? Or could it be that in the midst of these things, God being God, is working out kingdom purposes? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Jack in Wake Forest, what's your take on all this?
Hey, Dr. Brown, I got a little something to add from a personal side of things. I'm surprised you ever brought up contact sports, like boxing or whatever, because, you know, they have a lot to do with God. And I used to be a boxer, and I wasn't a Christian when I started, but when I got about halfway into my career, I got the Jesus pants going, I had the cross, you know, and I was convinced, you know, I'm boxing for God. There's no way I'm going to get beat. And I remember before the gold gloves, right? I prayed, and I was real nervous, big fight. And I opened my Bible. Oh, there it is. Psalm, I don't know, was it Psalm 20? I can't remember. He trains my hands for battle. He makes my feet like a deer. And I was like, oh, this is right from God. I'm going to just destroy this guy. Well, I think I received the worst beating of my life that night. And this is what I concluded from that. I had a good conversation after that fight with the North Carolina director for boxing. And he asked me about my shorts, and I got to witness to him a little bit there. I think that I changed my perspective that day. I think that God, you do want, you know, like Galatians says, do everything, whatever you eat or drink, do for the glory of God. And I was trying to box after that for the glory of God. And I do not think God wanted me to win. I think this guy across from me that I was boxing had nothing to do with God. And I don't think he cared whether I won or lost, but I think he cared about how I handled myself and if I was doing it for the right reasons and so on. So that's my take on it.
All right, so Jack, just a couple of questions for you. And by the way, when I was in Texas, a young man wanted to talk to me, a student in a ministry school whose chosen career is MMA, and he, you know, mixed martial arts, and he's apparently very good at it and about to go pro, and wanted my perspective on, you know, could he do that? He said it's a dark sport, and, you know, a lot of darkness there, people that are lost. That's why he wanted to bring the gospel there. So we talked about could it be the Lord or not, and would God use someone in a violent, you know, bloodlust kind of sport like that. But fundamental question then, you would say that the whole idea that if God is with me, I'm going to win, that there's something fundamentally wrong with that way of thinking?
Oh, yeah, I definitely would. I don't think God cares too much about that little detail. I think he cares more about how you perform, how you set yourself up, and when you're doing it for the right reason. But no, I don't think you can count on that at all.
All right, so let's come at this from another angle. Let's say that you're a place kicker in the NFL, okay? And your team has just made an unbelievable comeback, and there are 2 seconds left on the clock, and you've got just a little field goal to kick, and your team wins, and it's easy. You could make this in your sleep, and you're a professing Christian, and you blow it. So could you see a scenario where God has orchestrated that miss because he wants to work something in that person's life? Do you think that kind of thing could happen from the Lord?
Do I think it can happen? Oh, anything's possible with the Lord. Of course, how can you know? That's the, you know, there's so much danger in there when you start saying this is from God, this is not from God. I particularly like use a wisdom view instead of a specific will view as far as God's will goes. So I think God gives us wisdom. You know, God gives us the scriptures. Do your best with what he's given us. So that'd be my take on it. No, he could orchestrate it. Things could come out of it, but there's no way to know for sure. And I wouldn't profess that.
All right, and then last question for you. How do you feel, maybe there's some boxing match and a guy scores a dramatic knockout and the other guy's out cold in the corner and the doctors are gathered around him to check on him, and the guy raises his hand and say, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I couldn't have done this without the Lord. How do you personally feel when you see something like that?
Oh, terrible. I'm not a fan of using that verse. That is a verse that's on every sports person, every sports team. And I don't think that's what Paul was talking about when he was in jail writing that. I think he was talking about something else. And I think he was talking on an individual basis. Himself, he could handle all things. He could suffer all things because he had that hope for the future. Yes, it does. It gave me strength, and it did give me a reason to persevere. I mean, I think it helped me in my boxing career tremendously. In a personal reason, but I think that was God directly helping me? I don't know. I can't answer that for sure. And I wish he would not say that. I wish he would say something more like, you know, I just thank God for the opportunity to be here and be able to be healthy and, you know,
got
for
it.
Creation, for everything.
Got it. All right. Hey, Jack, thanks for weighing in. I appreciate it, man, very much. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, we got a lot more to say in the Super Bowl. Brenda, in High Point, we will get a woman's perspective next. We've gone from Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood to the Green Bay Packers, Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Super Bowl all today here on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us. Before I go back to the phones and get your take on, does God care about the Super Bowl? Does God orchestrate who wins or who loses? Is the whole thing just idolatry, or perhaps God is working in the midst of it. Just a neat little testimony I wanted to share. The folks who invited me down a couple times now to debate rabbis in Florida, a Jewish outreach ministry, a Jewish couple, believers in Jesus in Florida, they now have a discussion group that they've set up right in their apartment complex, giving out free DVDs if people come a couple of weeks. And they've put this ad out in their apartment complex or condos. Join us for a special DVD presentation featuring Rabbi Michael Gold of Temple Beth Torah, discussing with another Jewish scholar, Dr. Michael Brown, PhD, who believes that Yeshua is the Jewish Messiah, the topic Jesus Messiah or not. So the debate took place last July, but they are inviting folks over to their place, and they've got a number of folks already coming, Jewish non-believers, not yet believers. So it's just neat to hear kind of the afterlife of the debate being used as a discussion group. So pray with me that Jewish people will come to faith as they hear the message, see the presentation. If you don't have the DVD, it's another excellent resource for Jewish ministry and great learning tool. Just go to our online bookstore at askdrbrown.org. All right, Brenda in High Point, what's your take on my Super Bowl question?
Okay, I feel like that we know through the scriptures that God is, he's got his hand in everything. No matter what it is, he has got his hand in everything, and he cares about everything. I think he cares about ball games, boxing, and all that. But I think when it comes to who wins, a lot of times that is part of his permissive will. In other words, you know, someone could have been praying for a team that if they won, it would cause somebody to, you know, be saved. But I think it's more that, I think it's things like salvation and us living right and trying to get other people to him and to do everything we do to glorify his name. But as far as that, I really think that the Lord is really, he's in everything. He's in it. I mean, he knows about it. He knows what's going on. But I don't think he's like, sitting on one of the sidelines going, go, Green, go. You know, he doesn't have a preference. I think that he, you know, I think that's where his permissive will may be.
Got it. And you don't think that heaven, you know, God and the angels take a break to watch the Super Bowl?
Do I think God and the angels take a break to watch it?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think godly angels could care less who wins
Got
the
it.
Super Bowl.
All right. Hey, Brenda, thanks for weighing in. Appreciate it.
And shalom.
Shalom. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
All right. Let me grab another call here. Ron in Jacksonville. What's your take, sir?
I believe that that God wants a Christian everywhere there isn't one. And I believe that everything's important to him, and he has a purpose for everything. You had asked one of the listen, I think the other person that commentated prior to the woman that was just on there, if I just lost the question. I didn't remember what you asked, but
maybe about winning. Is winning everything, or does God care about who wins? That was one of the questions.
Oh, okay. What I believe about that, to me, it's like tithing. Initially, I think God uses every situation based on where we are,
mm-hmm.
and to increase our faith. I know He's not trying to decrease our faith, but tithing isn't a fix all. You know, I think it could be a first step towards more faith in God, where He'll prove Himself. But it's not a fix all. As we get older in the Lord, we realize that He expects more of us, and He's going to take us deeper. So if you know, we can't use the same fix He's not going to use the same fix to increase our faith. And in the sports world, I believe that you know, if that's where a person is, he'll use that initially to draw
right.
closer
kind,
to
kind
him.
Of baby steps. Show like a miracle of what happens when you give your life to the Lord. Got it. Hey, Ron, we're out of time, but that's a great point you raised there as well. Friends, we come back. I've got a neat little book testimony to share with you. And then my bottom line on God and the Super Bowl. Michael Brown here. Thank you for being with us on the Line of Fire. Tomorrow, I've got a dear friend of many years who served as a missionary in Africa and has just gone back recently to some of the countries where he worked and is amazed to see many people turning from Islam to Jesus. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We're going to talk about what God is doing in among Islamic peoples in Africa, the appeal of the gospel, what brings people into Islam, what brings them out in Jesus' name. I was handed a piece of mail today. Someone thought it was for me personally. It was actually for our ministry, but it was very touching. It was an $8 gift, and I'm looking, Department of Justice, and then I see, Federal Bureau of Prisons. Hey, Mark, let me personally thank you. This is a tithe from a prisoner named Mark, $8. This means a lot to me. I'm actually holding it in my hands. It didn't get processed like a normal gift would have because, as I said, it was thought to be for me personally, but, of course, this goes to our ministry work. But can I just tell each of you listening, every little bit goes a long way. And if all of you who are able, who are blessed by this broadcast, who are edified by the work that we're doing for the Lord, who want to stand with us as we stand as a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution, as we reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, as we raise up and send out laborers around the world, all of you that are blessed, whatever you can do to stand with us one time or on a monthly basis really goes a long way, makes a massive difference, and brings encouragement to us personally. So to the many Marks out there, thank you. Join us by going to askdrbrown.org. Click on support. Before my bottom line on God and the Super Bowl, today we got in the mail a physical copy of the cover for A Queer Thing Happened to America, which will be out in a little over a month. Now, as soon as the book is out, we're going to ask you to go to Amazon.com and order it online right there for a number of reasons, which we'll tell you as we get closer. But the book cover looks super. It's going to be an eye-catching cover that's going to draw a lot of people in to read the book. At the same time, just got the contract in for my commentary on the book of Job. That'll be the next major project I dive into, and I can hardly wait. All right. Caller just asked the question, are people equally excited about the work of God as they are about the Super Bowl? Great question. Let me give you my bottom line reflections. Number one, I fully believe that there are committed Christians in the NFL and in many other sports, and that God uses the situations there in their own growth, the adversity, different things they go through to teach them, just as he does in our own everyday lives. So in other words, he doesn't withdraw from the sport unless the sport itself is completely sinful, in which case he would deal with people to get out of it. That's how he'd work within it. But there are plenty of believers, and they may learn lots of valuable lessons in their time, in their experience, in these sports and disciplines, etc. But even more than that, their notoriety can then be used as a platform to them to share their gospel with other people, because share the gospel of Jesus, because they do become role models. If they're living this out, they do become role models. However, that being said, the idea that there is this massive thing of great importance called the Super Bowl is idolatrous. In other words, it is just a game. It's only a game. And people's emotions can get so caught up. I could do it as well. Get so caught up. Who wins? Oh, lost. Oh, no. Pain for weeks. And the team, oh, yes, euphoria. Whereas we can almost care less that our neighbors are saved or lost. So there's an idolatry to it that is grievous. Yes, God can absolutely work in the midst of it. And I'm sure he works through godly people. And I'm sure there are godly messages he can get out through it. But there is an idolatry to the thing itself that we need to repudiate. And remember, it's just a game. And as that game is being played, thousands of people are starving. Thousands of people are dying. Thousands of people are without God, without hope. Thousands of believers are struggling just to make it to the next day, and we need to look at the larger context of life and be kingdom-minded people while we live in this world. That's my bottom line for today. Tomorrow, don't miss my interview with a dear brother. Islam is falling to Jesus.